ground when we get on it. It's so damn small. I really hate flying. But I'll do anything for Daphne, even if my feet are 30,000 feet up in the air. And when my feet are on the ground, I'll show them what anything consists of. I'll need to find this Satan hat that woman spoke of. I'll need the extra edge.
Chapter 18. I sit up in bed, my skin prickling with awareness. It's dark. The only sound is the whoosh of the ceiling fan. But I feel someone in here, a presence. I'm not scared. Ever since I came back home, there has been this cloud of danger hovering over my head. I'm in the same house my mother died in, and the way my dad looks at me, it's like he wants me dead, too. The energy in the room is so powerful, it dissipates the creeping chill over my skin. The door my dad busted down all those years ago is still wonky. The trim is nailed in place. He hasn't even bothered to replace it. I wait for my eyes to adjust to the night, and for some reason, I try to see if anyone is in the corner. It's reflex, like I'm expecting someone to be there. "I feel you," I whisper into the room. I wait for him to say something, to say anything, but he doesn't. Headlights peek through the window for a second as a car drives by, giving me a glimpse of the room. I stop breathing when I see a flash of a tall, broad man in the far corner of my room where my dresser is. It still has a butterfly sticker on the middle drawer. I turn on the lamp to get a better look at the man, but he isn't there. I check all of the corners of the room, but he isn't there. I know I didn't make him up. He was there. "Please, tell me if you're there. Mentally, I can't take any more unknowns," I beg, my heart nearly bursting from my chest with hope. I know him. I feel him. But how? I expect him to say something, anything, but the ceiling fan is all I hear as it spins in circles. Maybe he was in my head. I don't even know who I am anymore. I don't want to be in this house. I don't want to be under the same roof as my father. I'm scared. I miss someone. The cotton pillowcase rubs against my cheek as I bury my face into it and sob. I clutch my hand over my heart, hating how much it hurts and hating even more that I don't understand why. "What's happening to me?" I wail, stifling my cries in the pillow so Daddy doesn't hear me. He'll get mad. I rub my nose against my shirt and sniffle, then tuck my hands under my damp cheek. There are too many unknowns in my life, and all of my questions revolve around Daddy. What's that say about what I know? I thought I remembered a time when Daddy got sober and our life together was good. But now that I'm here, I'm wondering if that's just what I made myself believe so I felt better. If I felt what I feel now, then it isn't surprising I left. But why did Aunt Tina come back if Daddy is a bad man? Why am I here? What power does he have over me? Did I make up the birthday parties? My friends? If all of it is fake, then what happened to my mom? The burn on my chest stings, and I hiss as I readjust myself in bed. "Holy moly. Just forget it," I gripe and sit up, then turn on the lamp again. I'm never going to be able to sleep in this hellhole. A man laying across my tattered pink chaise lounge appears. I open my mouth on a scream, but when I see his face, no sound comes out. I crawl to the side of the bed to get a better look at him. The light moves across half of his face, and when his eyes land on mine, my worries halt. He has shaggy, dark hair and a short beard. His gaze is penetrating, reaping my soul inside out and right side up. He is wearing a black leather cut that says, "Ruthless Kings," similar to the one Seer wore. His legs are long and encased in worn denim jeans with scuffed black boots. The scent of pine and leather tickles my senses, and the oddest sensation comes over me. I know him. I don't know how I know him, but I do. He's so familiar.
"Are you afraid of me?"
he asks, his voice swinging low and deep as the lowest note of a trombone. Should I be? It's the wrong question to ask. The man can obviously kill me with a snap of his finger.
No, Comet. I'd never hurt you.
Comet? My brows push together when I hear the word. Comet, I repeat, a throbbing in my head pressing against my skull. There's a memory there.
Yes.
He rushes to the ground, falling to his knees.
You're my Comet. My name is Tongue, but my given name is Wayne Hendricks. Seer says you don't remember us.
I shake my head and my lips wobble. This unbearable feeling weighs down on me. Not yet, but I think I remember how I feel. And I've felt...
What?
I've been feeling like I miss someone deeply. Like when I see shadows and an alligator sticker. It makes me feel... happy. Why is that?
We have a pet alligator. His name is Happy. And we met in the shadows, Comet. You made me feel what love was the moment I met you.
Why can't I remember? I begin to cry.
You do,
he whispers, knee walking until he is at the edge of the bed.
Can I touch you? Would that bother you?
I shake my head and lean to his hand when he lifts in the air to touch my cheek. One touch. Why do I have a feeling all it would take is one touch?
Who the fuck are you talking to?
Daddy yells. His drunken steps tumble down the hall to my room. Glancing at my door, then back to Tongue, I'm surprised to see he isn't there. But he was. I know it. Daddy opens the door and fumbles over his own 2 feet, then hits the side of my dresser. The light from the hallway trickles into my room, and that's when I see him standing in the far left corner. He's staring Daddy down, a furious expression on his face. A knife glints in the cheap yellow glow. And that turns me on.
You're lying,
he spits, turning up the bottle of Jack Daniels in his hand.
I heard you. Walls are paper thin, Daphne. It's how I caught your whore of a mother cheating on me, fucking him in my own goddamn house.
He points the liquor bottle at me and chuckles in his dirty, tidy whiteies. He isn't wearing a shirt, and his pot belly from drinking so much is pronounced. His boobs are nearly as big as mine, and he has sweat dripping down his chest. There are cigarette burns on his underwear, small black rings in the material from where he fell asleep with one in his hand in his recliner.
Keep it down in here. I won't say it again,
he warns before storming out of the room the best he can, but not before his shoulder and the edge of the door meet.
Ugh, stupid fucking bitch.
He pushes the door with his hand as if it's the one in the way. The knob digs into the cheap drywall, causing it to crumble. His ambling footsteps and incoherent mumbling gets further down the hall, and Tongue's boot lifts from the shadow and slowly shuts it.
I can kill him.
He's my dad, I say it in a way that has an explanation to itself tone.
Family doesn't always mean blood, Comet.
I twist the yellow blanket between my fingers. It's something I've had since I was a little girl. It used to bring me comfort, but not anymore. Nothing does. Except Tongue. My mind might not recall my memories, but my heart remembers how I feel. We're more than friends, aren't we? He walks so quietly for a man that's as big as he is. He stops at the foot of my bed, and I'm drawn to the tattoos on his arms.
You're my best friend, and the love of my life, Comet.
Why can't I remember you, then? I sob. Why am I here?
You do remember.
He makes his way to my side of the mattress, sits down beside me, and takes my hand. I inhale as his fingers brush over mine. Sparks? No. Something more than sparks dance over the nerve endings on my skin. It's so much more. It's fire and ice, a million needles dancing and whirling in a tango over my skin. I imagine this is what the heat of the sun feels like.
Yeah, Comet.
His voice deepens.
You remember.
The rough pad of his finger strokes the top of my hand. I gasp, my eyes fluttering like the butterflies in my stomach as he travels up, caressing my bicep next. My entire body trembles, reacting to the simplest touch, but I have a feeling nothing is simple with this man.
Every time I touch you feels like the first time. The way you feel right now.
His fingers drag up my shoulder and to my neck, grabbing hold of it like he has done 100 times. My body tells me he has, because I arch my back, tilting my head to give him access to do with me whatever he wants. This is crazy. I've never met this man in my life. But then there is that push in the back of my mind, the one that bends reality, and most of the time in my life, nothing makes sense. When I look at Tongue, I know everything is going to be okay. A shift happens inside my soul and life makes sense. Then, when he touches me, I'm yearning for the memories we have already made. I want to know what we have together. What if I never remember again? The thought of that scares me to death. I hold a hand over my mouth and muffle a sob. What if this is all I have? What if this life is all I know?
It isn't,
he says, as if it is so simple.
What you feel right now says you know a lot more than you think.
He rests his forehead against the side of my head.
And if I have to, I'll remember for the both of us. I'll tell you every moment we have ever had together.
Yeah? I ask him with a watery smile.
Yeah, Comet. I'd do anything for you.
He turns around and stares at the door when the sound of the TV gets louder.
You have no idea how hard it is not to kill him right now after...
He swallows and his Adam's apple bobs.
It isn't my place to say. You need to remember on your own so you can make the right decision.
He's mean and a drunk. A mean drunk, but he doesn't deserve to die.
He does for what he did to you, your mom, and your aunt.
My mom killed herself. My eyes widen when he grabs the sides of my face. His brown eyes dart between mine. His thumbs trace the edges of my mouth.
I know you don't believe that.
I pull away from his touch and scurry out of the bed. My t-shirt falls to my knees. No, I don't know you. You're here in my room. I don't even know how you got in my house.
I broke the back window and climbed through,
he says, unapologetically, shrugging his shoulder.
And don't say you don't know me.
He pushes off the bed and towers to his full height. I have to crane my neck to see his face.
You know me,
he growls, my heart reacting to the gravelly timbres. He takes a step forward.
You know what you feel for me.
You... I poke a finger against his very muscular chest, and the air from my lungs escapes me. Holy moly. I don't mean to say that out loud, but wow, that's an impressive chest. His lips tilt in an awkward smirk. I still don't know you. My vibrato is weak as he takes a step closer. His lip curls in rage.
Yes, you do. You are mine. Daphne, I am yours. You know that.
I know you are in my house, in the corners, hiding in the dark. Normal people don't do that. I'm going to have to ask you to leave before I spontaneously combust with arousal. He buries his fingers in my hair, then yanks my head back as he fists the strands.
We are far from normal, Comet.
He brushes his lips against my chest.
One thing you should know about us.
He skims his mouth to my ear and nibbles the lobe before he whispers.
We fell in love in the dark. And make no mistake, you will fall in love with me again in the dark.
My eyes shut on their own accord, my body pressing against his. He lets me go and his warmth leaves me as I open my eyes again to stare at a ghost. He's no longer there, but my door is open. I know my mind isn't playing tricks on me, not with how my body is yearning for his touch again. I understand why my eyes have been drifting to the corners, examining the shadows, and why my heart has been waiting for a reason why. I trust the dark. The shadows are my home. The corners are my comfort. And the darkness is a place for me to be loved.
Chapter 19. And where have you been? I pause as I'm entering through the window of the bedroom I'm staying in at the NOLA clubhouse. It's an old plantation-style home that's a little run down from how old it is. It has charm, though. Pocus said when he became prez, the first thing he did was rip down the slave quarters. Then he brought in a witch to cast the ghosts to their resting place so they can finally be at peace. He didn't want to be the reason why they continued to suffer, when they had suffered long enough. I feel like I'm a teenager getting caught sneaking inside after my curfew. Reaper flips on the light and reveals himself. He is sitting in the corner, left ankle over his right knee, and his fingers are pressed together in a steeple position. I was with Daphne. Part of me hates that she can't remember, but it's kind of fucking hot, too. My cock is still hard from how she reacted to me. Getting her to want me again won't be a problem. She feels we are meant to be. I have no doubt we will be together again. Did you kill him? I jump down from the window and close it, locking it in place. No, I didn't. He blows out a breath and snags the bottle of beer off the coffee table to take a swig. Good. We need more information about him. I wanted to. I know. No, Reaper, I don't think you do know. I sit on the bed and I lift my hands in the air to show him how bad they are shaking. I'm so fucking mad. The restraint. I held myself back, but it was the most difficult thing I've ever had to do. He was there, drunk, wearing only underwear, and how he talked to her. It's no wonder she's so damn confused. His abuse is powerful, Reaper. He squeezes my shoulder. I know, Tongue. I'm sorry. Come on, let's go get you a beer and talk to their doctor and tech guy. We are going to see what we can find, okay? What's there to find out? Her dad is a terrible man and he needs to die. Terrible people always have a reason to do terrible things. What's his? People don't need a reason to do bad things, Reaper. It's as simple as them liking the pain they inflict. I put myself in that category. I don't consider myself a good person, not with what I do and why I do it. Simple fact of the matter is, I love the pain I inflict. I love the suffering I bring to others. I know my soul is damned to the wicked. I'm going to go down in smoke and flames, and the ride to hell will be one I will enjoy. We walk down the hallway, the brownish-red hardwood floors creaking under us. I take the time to look around and inspect the house. The ceiling is high and there are chandeliers hanging low. They seem like they were installed with the place. They aren't illuminated, but there are lamps attached to the wall every few feet that are turned on to show us the way. A cold chill rips through me, and I have to stop walking to catch my breath. I shiver. A cold cloud leaves from between my lips as if the temperature just dropped to 30 degrees. Reaper is a few steps ahead of me and he pauses, looks over his shoulder and bobs his head as he waves his hand. Well, come on, what are you waiting for? Sorry, cold chill. It's hot in here. What are you talking about? Reaper takes out a black handkerchief and pats the back of his neck. Sorry, mon ami. Pocus apologizes as we come into the impressive main room. They have a large bar that takes up one entire wall with shelves of booze. We don't have that in our clubhouse anymore because of Patrick. I'm fine with it. It isn't a big deal. But right now, selfishly, I'm glad to kick back and pop a top without feeling bad about it. What can I say? I guess I'm an asshole. The air conditioning broke yesterday. We were waiting on the guy to come and fix it. Every now and then, you'll feel a cold chill. It happens in a house with old bones like this. When we get to the bar, the guy behind it has a prospect cut, and Pocus slaps his hand on the black cement bar top. Two beers, Buffy. You got it, Prez. The kid can't be a day over 21, but he double-fists the bottles and pops the tops off them at the same time. He places them in front of us, and I can see the sweat dripping down the outside of the bottle. A beautiful fat droplet that I can't help but bring to my mouth and sigh from how refreshing it is. Cold chill? That shouldn't happen when the air conditioning is out. I mention, following Pocus to the couch where a few of the guys are talking amongst themselves. Mon ami, Haven't you ever heard of ghosts? Seer reveals himself in the front entryway, leaning against the wall with his arms and legs crossed. He has a big smile on his face. Don't believe in ghosts, I say, lifting the bottle to my lips. Seer's laugh booms, which somehow even has a slight Cajun twist to it. Oh, I know that ain't right. You do, you just don't want to admit it. There are a few in this house, they're harmless. Yeah, they ain't no problem, Hex chimes in from the middle of the couch. His arms are spread wide across the back. I've talked to them a few times to make sure. They like it here. They feel safe. Reaper spews his beers out, then coughs, which makes me wonder how Tool would act. Damn it, I wish he were here. I'm fine, Reaper chokes again, his eyes turning red from the force of the cough. Went down the wrong way. Hex smirks knowingly. Sure, mon ami, that's it. New Orleans is a whole other animal. There is shit here I do not and will not understand, but that's the beauty about cultural differences. I can appreciate them even if I don't completely understand them. Go on, sit down. Don't let these fools scare you off. Pocus sits down and Seer takes the seat beside him. The couch is big enough for 10 people to fuck and sleep on. The leather gives and molds to my body. I groan and drop my head against the cushion. This is a comfortable couch. I turn my head right to left. Where is Bullseye? I notice he isn't around. I only see a huge flat-screen TV hanging on the wall and a few portraits. I swear they are looking right at me. He's in bed. He isn't feeling too hot, but doesn't want to admit it because of his pride, Seer says. Dumbass. Reaper hisses and goes to push himself up when Seer lifts his palm to stop him. Leave him be. He will learn the hard way. Don't we have work to do for Daphne? He asks, bringing us to the task at hand. Yeah. Fast typing from my right has me staring at a slim guy. I'm Snake. We have met before. Briefly, he clarifies. Snake. What earned you that name? I slither through all necessary evils to gain information. The reflection of the computer shines in the guy's eyes. I need to go check on Bullseye, Reaper says. I don't feel comfortable not checking in. Graveyard is with him. He's fine. Getting the insulin he needs, Pocus states, placing his elbows on his knees. He's our doctor. And his name is Graveyard? That's not too reassuring. Should be, considering his graveyard doesn't have anyone in it. The front door opening has everyone turning to see who it is. Lightning strikes across the sky and thunder rolls right after. The man shakes his jacket and pulls down his hood. Oh, fuck no. What the fuck is he doing here? He deserved a calm tongue, sit down, and don't cause any problems. She's my daughter, and you won't stop me from protecting her. Mercy has the audacity to imply I can't protect her. Sit down. Reaper's tone leaves no room for argument as he grips my hand. Now. I crack my neck and do as I'm told. I never take my eyes off Mercy as he drags a plastic chair from the corner, spins it backwards, and sits down. Water drips everywhere around him, and he slicks his silver hair back over his head to keep the wet strands out of his face. I hate him. You could have told me. And deal with your grouchy ass from Vegas to here? No thanks. Reaper answers me and then chugs down his beer. Snake claps his hands together. Okay, before this bickering gives me a headache, her father, Mercy, her other father? I don't know how to phrase it. It's okay, I haven't exactly earned the title, he says. Damn right, I grumble, and it earns me a hard slap in the chest. He has a record a mile long, Snake ignores us and continues typing. He has a crap ton of arrests from 20 years ago, all assault and battery charges, but they were always dropped. Mercy inhales a sharp breath and rubs his eyes. I feel bad for him. I'm being a bastard to him, but he just found out the woman he loved was abused and he had a daughter. I need to learn to be nice. A few drunken disorderlies from a few different bars, DUI. His license is revoked. He shouldn't be driving. Snake clacks away at the keyboard. I've never seen fingers move so fast. I'm jealous. I want to type like that, but I need to learn how to read and write better first. It isn't too far-fetched he'd go too far. I'd say what happened to Michelle most definitely had something to do with him. Oh, it did. A guy coming from the hallway carrying a small black pack in one hand states, in the other he has a file. Here, this is for Bullseye. I know he already has one, but this is for you to keep if you feel necessary to check his sugar like he is a damn teenager. All of my members are fucking teenagers. Reaper snaps, side-eyeing me as if I'm a culprit. Only right now, the rest of the time, I'm not even noticeable. We haven't met. I'm Graveyard. You don't see me around because I work a few nights over at the local hospital. It's the only reason I was able to get this file. It was sealed. Now that gets my attention. Sneaky, I say, impressed. You have your ways, I have mine. He opens the file and one flap hits the table with a small slap. The autopsy report says she was shot in the head, but she was also shot in the shoulder. That isn't too common with suicides, is it? Reaper asks. No, and statistically it's more likely for a woman to pick a less violent method, like overdosing on drugs or the car fumes in the garage. A gun to the head is a man's top choice. He pulls out a few pictures and lays them on the table. These are pictures of the crime scene. Oh, Michelle. Mercy's voice breaks as he reaches for a picture. He rubs his fingers in his eyes to stop the tears, but it's no use. The longer he stares at the image of his dead lover, the more emotional he gets. You know her? Graveyard asks. I'm sorry, I didn't know. We should have told you. He is the biological father of Daphne, and this is her mother. Pocus advises with a regretful tone. Fuck, man, I'm sorry. Graveyard tries to pick up the pictures, but Mercy stops him by grabbing his wrist. Don't. I need to see what I could have prevented. He analyzes the photographs and closes his eyes. She died wearing the locket I gave her. I take a peek at a picture and see a silver locket covered in blood around her neck, hanging down to where it nearly touches the carpet in the picture. Mercy traces it with his finger, staring at her as if she had just died yesterday. I guess she did. To him, at least. No one knows what to say. There's nothing to say. Nothing can make him feel better. The thick expanse of Graveyard's throat moves as he swallows. So, it's impossible for these wounds to have been made by her. Her father's statement says he was trying to wrestle the gun away from her, but it backfired. That isn't possible? No. The size of the wound, the gunpowder residue, the angle, she was most definitely shot at. And when he had her weak, he shot her between the eyes. Why wouldn't they catch that? 20 years ago, they probably saw a mess they didn't want to clean up, and suicide was the easiest way, Graveyard explains. No real proof it was him, either. That's not true, I realize. Daphne witnessed it. She's an unreliable witness because of the psychosis. I slam my fist on the table and sneer my teeth at Graveyard. Because she saw him kill her mother. Doesn't matter. Besides, there's no way for us to prove it in court. It's been too long. So I can kill him? I say happily. Like we were going to do any different. Reaper rolls his eyes. Y'all, I just found a pretty good reason why her father attacked her aunt. Snake pipes up. Mercy stands and drops the picture in his hand. Tina was attacked? What the fuck? Is there anything else you're leaving out? Reaper rubs his temples. No, that's it. I'm sorry for not telling you. Is she okay? He asks, black brows so tight together they look like one. She's hanging in there, Seer says with a positive nod and gives Mercy a warm grin. Okay, Mercy nods. Daphne can't lose her too. Snake, what were you saying? There was a will that Michelle left. She left all of her money to Daphne, but she could only get it when she turned 26. Until then, she had a guardian, her aunt. Her birthday is in June. He wanted her aunt to sign everything over, and she said no. That's the only thing that makes sense. And he called Daphne because he knew he could get into her mind and fucking manipulate her to sign over the money. It can't be much, right? The trailer is falling apart. She struggled growing up. Because her mom was paying into an account for Daphne. She only kept what she needed to get by. It's grown, Snake whistles. $2 million. No wonder her dad wants the will. He didn't get life insurance since it was suicide and not an accident. Fuck, that's why he wants Tina dead. If she dies, he is going to get that money. No fucking way am I going to let my little girl suffer more than she already has. I'm going to kill that son of a bitch. We can kill him together. Lightning cracks outside, matching the fury in my heart. Mercy and I have a long stare-off before he concedes. Seer's eyes are bright as he looks off into the distance. He's going to the hospital tomorrow. He blinks and then sags against the couch, then examines my arm. He's going to rip a few of those stitches open. I don't care, I say, finishing off my beer. It won't be the only scar I have. I can staple it tonight to give it a better chance at not opening up, Graveyard offers, picking up the pictures and putting them in the file. Can you all bring the guy here? I want to see the Vegas boys in action and see what the fuss is about, Graveyard says. Well, the NOLA chapter is about to get one hell of a show, because I'm not going to stop until this man is disemboweled. And if Hex can see ghosts, I hope he witnesses Daphne's father's soul being dragged to hell, or I'll become the hellhound that rips him to pieces.
Chapter 20. A slap of a hand across my cheek has my head jerking to the right and the handle of the coffee cup slipping out of my hand. It shatters on the floor with the coffee, which earns me another hit on my other cheek. My eyes water and my jaw drops open from the sting. Something flashes in my mind, a vision of him hitting my mom in the same fashion.
Since you can't make a decent drink, I'm going to the fucking bar,
Daddy slurs, already drunk. How am I going to get to the hospital to see Aunt Tina? I ask, holding in the tears as my cheek throbs.
I don't give a shit. Figure it out, Michelle.
He calls me by my mother's name, and as he stares at me, I don't see love, but pure hate. He snatches the keys from the fruit bowl and leaves me holding my cheek. He kicks the coffee table as he passes by it, then kicks the screen door open with his foot. The door comes off its hinges, which doesn't seem too difficult since it's so cheap. Crying, I kneel on the floor and pick up the pieces of the mug, careful to place them in my palm so I don't cut myself. I wipe my cheek on my shirt and think about Tung, wishing he was here so I felt safe. Something about this house makes my nerves shake. My instincts roar at me to get out. I toss the broken ceramic chunks in the trash, then grab a towel and clean up. The floor molts and moves, sways and dips, and I gasp. Someone is standing in front of me. No! I scream and scurry away until my back hits the cabinet. The handle digs into the space of my shoulder and spine. A bruise I'll feel tomorrow. It's my mother. She's in the dress we buried her in, drenched in dirt. Her skin is pale, and the gunshot wound in her head bleeds. You aren't real. You aren't real, I repeat, unable to take my eyes off her. Another form appears behind her. Her mouth opens, her jaw continuing to the floor as she screams, "Run!" at me. My father is behind her, gun drawn. My heart is hammering as I stagger to my feet, watching the horror unfold. The gunshot rings out. I hold my hands over my ears and close my eyes with a scream. The ringing stops. I can smell the gunpowder, like a bonfire smoke clinging to someone's clothes. I peek one eye open to see if they are there, but the space is empty. What if my mom didn't kill herself? What if I've been suppressing the truth? I glance at the clock and see it's past 10 a.m. and decide to get the hell out of here. I'm going to the hospital, and when I'm done, I'm going to find Tung. I'm safer with him than I am here. I know that. I feel that. He would never lay a hand on me. I run to my room and grab my purse, then sprint toward the front door. I step outside, one arm on the door handle, as I turn around to take one last look at the place that's haunted my mind for far too long. Daddy's fear is no longer going to control me. I'm not going to fall into his ways again. Something about seeing my mother scream at me felt familiar. All too familiar. Like how it is with Tung. Which means I've experienced it before. Damn this house. Damn my mind. But I won't damn what I feel. My gut feeling is all I have to go on right now, and my gut is telling me to get the fuck out of here. My blue Converse sink into the mud as I cut through the pathetic front lawn and jump over a broken lawn gnome. When I get to the road, I take a right and start the long journey to the hospital. It isn't too hot today since there is cloud coverage, but the air is still sticky. I swear I can smell the rotten core of Bourbon Street, too. Like trash and booze. And after a few days out in the New Orleans weather, that smell can even make a raccoon turn its nose up. The sound of a motorcycle has me looking up from my feet to see down the dusty street. As it gets closer, a few bees fly around me since I'm passing wildflowers. They don't bother me. A slap to the face doesn't hurt worse than a bee sting. The bike rolls to a slow stop, and Tongue places his feet on the ground.
"What's my comet doing out here all alone?"
He takes off his sunglasses and grabs my chin.
"Did he do that to your face?"
I lower my lashes, staring at the mud on my shoes.
"I'm going to fucking kill him."
The gravel lodged in his throat makes me want to jump inside him so he can lull me to a deep sleep. His fingers play with a strand of my hair and he tucks it behind my ear. His lips are on my cheek next, warm and soft, a complete contradiction to the tough armor he wears.
"No one hurts my comet without paying a price."
My clit throbs. I don't understand why I'm turned on by him threatening to kill my father, but I am. Something about being overly protected has me wanting to mount him right on his bike. Maybe it's because the man who I was supposed to count on in life didn't do a bang-up job at protecting me, and now that I have it in spades, I want every ounce of protective instinct he can give me.
"You have no idea how much I've missed you, Comet. I'm not going to push you, but I want you to know how much I want to kiss you. I've missed your lips."
His hot breath tickles the space under my ear, and goosebumps travel all over my body, tightening my nipples from the chill. And it is far from cold outside.
"Everywhere. I've missed your lips everywhere. My mouth, my neck, my chest."
I whimper.
"My cock."
His voice turns dark and sinful, twisting its way into my soul like a cruel addiction. My mouth waters, and I ache to taste him in the back of my throat.
"I miss worshiping your body."
I turn toward him, our lips inches apart, and that familiar feeling returns. I think I miss all those things, too. No. I know I do. "Kiss me," I say breathlessly, staring at the full red lips. My fingers hover over his cheeks because I'm afraid to touch him. Afraid because he's the most magnificent man I've ever seen. His stubble scratches my palm and his head tilts back. So I roam down his neck, then over his shoulders, and he grabs my hips. He groans when I skim along his pecs, feeling the muscle tense. From me. "Kiss." My words are silenced as he pushes our bodies together and slams his lips onto mine. A flash of us tangled in the sheets slams against my mind. I don't know if it's me thinking about what I want or what I've already had with him, but I want it again and again. Our tongues tangle, and he rocks my hips over the intimidatingly long erection tenting his jeans. I have to break away from him for a minute to catch my breath, and a slight whine escapes me when he hits the bundle of electrified nerves. He shoves me away, and for a moment, I think it's because of something I did when he unzips his pants, fishes out his cock, grips the thick meat, and pumps twice.
"Comet!"
He shouts my name into the sky for any and all to hear, points his cock to the dirt, and comes. My eyes widen as I watch the thick streams paint the ground. "Holy moly," I rasp in awe.
"Ah, fuck yes. I told you," he gasps. "I've missed you so fucking much. Look what you do to me."
He squeezes the last droplet out of the slit, and I don't know what comes over me, but the pearly drop is too pretty to deny. I bend down and lick it off the hot, red crown. His salty taste slides down my throat, and now I wish it hadn't all gone to waste on the ground. He wraps his hands around my hair and pulls me back.
I might have come quick because I've missed you so goddamn bad, but my cock is always ready for round two. You suck me, I'm going to bend you over this bike and fuck you, Comet. My recovery time is impeccable. Don't you fucking forget that, and it always will be when it comes to you.
I moan against his neck and rock my hips onto his knee as I straddle him. I ache to be filled by him. I claw at his back and create as much friction as I can.
That's it, Comet. Use me.
I want you. I have an eagle's eye view of his cock.
Not until you remember.
Why? I cry out in frustration, dry humping his thigh harder. He wraps a hand around my throat and forces me to meet his flushed face.
Because I need you to remember how much you love me.
My orgasm crashes over me and Tongue's arm wraps around my waist as I fall against him. I'm gasping the humid air and my entire body is shaking with aftershocks. I grin as he pushes the hair from my forehead. I want to do that again.
That's my Comet.
He laughs, searching my eyes for memories. I'm sorry. I don't...
It's okay. I mean it.
He gives me a kiss on top of my head, then sighs as he pulls away. He tucks himself in. Even semi-hard, he is big.
Stop looking at me like that. I'm only so strong, Comet. Hop on and hold on tight.
He pats the seat behind him, then hands me his helmet.
Are you going to see your Aunt Tina?
How did you know?
I know everything about you.
If any other man said that to me, I'd be scared. But knowing he cares so much to find out everything about me has that silly organ in my chest tripping over itself. I throw my leg over the bike and settle in behind him. I wrap my arms around his waist, and his rough hands that promise a hard day's work caress me for a moment. My skin is alive. I'm alive, and I smile for the first time since... probably since I saw him last.
Feels so good to have your hands on me,
he admits.
You scared me when I woke up alone in bed and you were nowhere to be found.
You were scared? You don't look like a man that scares easy, I reply, resting my cheek against his back. The leather of his cut is warm from the day, but comfortable against the bruise on my cheek.
I do when it comes to you. Always when it comes to you.
He cranks the bike again, and the vibrations tickle between my legs, igniting another round of sensations. Why can't the veil in my mind go away? Why can I remember how he makes me feel, but I can't remember what we have built together? He does a U-turn in the middle of the empty road and applies pressure on the throttle. We speed down the narrow street, passing a blur of trees on either side of us. My hair whips behind me, and the ends sting my shoulders as they lash around me, snapping like serpents. It feels right, being here, with him. Even if I never remember, I know where I'm meant to be, and that is where he is. We pass the loud jazz of the French Quarter, and I wish he and I could spend the night experiencing the wild haunts of New Orleans. All too soon, he is pulling up to the hospital. I undo the strap under my chin and take off the helmet, then hop off the bike. My legs are tingling and wobbly. I giggle when I stumble and he catches me.
You okay, Comet?
He asks with a crooked grin, one that doesn't show teeth. Yeah, I think I'll be all right. I'll see you later, right?
In every dark corner you can find,
he states. As I stare at his face, I have one thing repeating in my head. How can I love a man when the only memory I have is the one my heart tells me?
Chapter 21. My Comet is crazy if she thinks I'm going to let her go in there alone. I park my bike in the nearest spot, place my helmet on the seat, and follow in after her. I don't want her to feel smothered, especially after what happened between us. I didn't expect that. I was on my way over to check on her when she was walking down the road. And one thing led to another. It always does with us. Memory be damned. I dig my phone out of my pocket and send a voice message to Reaper. I'm at the hospital now. I'll update you if I see your father, and I'll act accordingly. I press the send button, then press the audio message again. I won't kill him here, I clarify, no matter how much I want to. I press send again and tuck the phone in my back pocket. I pass the lady at the front desk. She's too busy talking on the phone to notice me slip by. Only family members can get into intensive care right now, and that's where Daphne is headed. I keep my eye on her back and make sure she gets to her aunt's room safely. I hide behind the closest wall and peek my head around the corner to see her talking to the doctor. A smile ghosts over her face and then tears drip down her cheek. I'd kill him for making her cry if they didn't look like happy tears. She turns around after giving the male doctor a hug and heads toward a door on the far left. When she opens it, I rush after her and stop the door from shutting with my boot, then dip inside, then dart into the bathroom. I crack the door so I can listen. Why am I doing this again? Her aunt knows me. If anything, she can verify who I am. Which might not be a good thing. I'll stay right here for now.
Aunt Tina, Daphne cries. You're awake, oh my God. I came as soon as Daddy called. No, her aunt cries. No, you need to leave. Your dad is not who he says. He did.
She struggles to say as her heart rate monitor starts to race.
Aunt Tina, someone help her.
Daphne's pain screams throughout the halls, and I want to go out there and pull her to safety, but I know I can't. Not yet. A stampede of doctors and nurses fly into the room. Wait outside, they say to Daphne.
No, she's my aunt. I can't leave her. Ma'am, we will get you when everything is settled. Wait outside, please,
the nurse says with a stern, no-argument tone. I watch through the crack as Daphne gets pushed out the door. I hate to see her cry. I hate to see her hurt. I wish I could take all of her pain away and protect her from all the horrible things this world has to offer. That isn't realistic, but I can try. I'm not sure how long I hide in the bathroom, but I hear the doctors speak a flurry of medical words I don't understand and then declare her stable. Thank fuck. One by one, two white coats and a nurse in blue scrubs leave the room. It's a long shot that her dad will come here today, but we can't be too safe. We have to protect her aunt at all costs, and it's better if Daphne doesn't know the plan, so she doesn't feel like she has to lie to her dad. Even if the man is a piece of shit, she will love him for the simple fact that he is her father, a privilege he will never deserve.
I know you're there.
Aunt Tina's struggling words have me stepping out from the bathroom and into the shadow the room keeps, which is usually close to the wall or in a corner. Her blue eyes follow mine as I stand against the wall.
How did you know?
She said, your energy buzzed the room every time you entered it.
She coughs, then licks her dry lips. I come around the edge of the bed and grab the water pitcher off the stand and pour her a paper cupful. I bring it to her mouth and she greedily chugs it down.
Thank you,
she croaks. If the desert had a voice, it would be Tina's right now. Do you know what's going on with Daphne? She shakes her head and swallows. She doesn't remember anything about me, us, or Vegas. She found out her dad wasn't her dad. Come to find out, her mom had a thing with Mercy, a close friend of the club. Then her piece-of-shit father calls and tells her to come home because you're in the hospital. Why can't she remember?
She shuts down when she thinks she's protecting herself, when the truth is too close to the surface.
That has me straightening my spine. You know how her mom died? She nods and a tear runs down her cheek.
I tried to get her away, but I had no proof. Her dad brainwashes her somehow and she believes everything he says.
She's a daughter looking for her father's love, I say in sadness. Tina agrees, and I pluck a tissue from the Kleenex holder and dab her cheeks dry. She hisses when I apply too much pressure. Sorry. It sounds like a weak apology, which means it probably is. Did you know about Mercy? Her lip trembles, and she stares at the ceiling, her eyes filling to the brim.
Yes.
Why didn't you tell Daphne?
I hiss, and I mean to sound as deadly as I can because I'm close to taking a pillow and killing her for what she did. How long did she let Daphne suffer needlessly?
Michelle made me promise not to say a word. I didn't know he was alive.
Very much so. And he has an axe to fucking grind. You people have got to start telling the truth. I lace my fingers behind my head and wonder what position this puts me in now. If she feels like everyone has lied to her, she'll close herself off from everyone, and who knows what her mind will conjure up to scare her. Why didn't you tell her about the money?
She was determined to work hard for herself. Money wouldn't have mattered.
I worry my bottom lip as I stare out the window into the parking lot. My mind whirls with how to protect Daphne, but I don't know how anymore. Everyone around her has lied. I don't want to be lumped in with those people. If there is one thing our relationship has been built on, it's honesty. I'm giving her time to remember me on her own without trying to push her, but you and her dad and her mom, you guys are making that really fucking hard.
I'm sorry.
Sorry doesn't fucking cut it. Sorry doesn't make her worries go away, does it? Lying to her all her life, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I was protecting her too, in my own way.
I get in her face, my arms gripping the sides of the hospital bed to cage her head with my arms. The whites of her eyes are red from busted blood vessels, and she has a busted top lip. You chose wrong.
No.
I straighten, not expecting her to admit her wrongs, but she does.
You'll take care of her? She's never had that.
She will always have that with me, I say honestly. Just as the doctor hurries into our room, slams the door, and leans against it. He's sweaty and pale, and reeks of fear. When he sees me, his eyes widen and he stays low to the ground, then dives to the right to get hidden by a wall.
Don't panic, he stammers,
while panicking. I'm impressed with no one here. Everyone is a goddamn pussy. I stomp over and pick the twig up by the collar of his white jacket and slam him against the wall. His toes drag along the ground. How about you don't panic and tell me what has your panties in a twist, Doc?
The hospital is on lockdown. No one in, no one out.
Why? I growl.
There's a man with a gun and he has a hostage. He's on this floor.
The doctor squirms. A gunshot echoes outside and the hallways act as tunnels to make everyone's screams travel.
Daphne,
I gasp with horror, wearing the same fear as the man in front of me.
What does the man look like? The hostage?
I slam him against the wall again.
I don't know,
he begins to cry. I slap him across the face and push my own fear aside.
Fucking get it together and be a man. What does he look like? And if you don't tell me, I'll gut you right here, right now. I'm just as dangerous as the man outside, only I'm giving you a chance to live, so fucking tell me.
I roar as quickly as I can so no one can hear us.
He is older. White tank top, greasy hair.
And the hostage? I don't know, I swear, I don't know. They didn't say. They paged code black, which means active shooter. I drop him to the floor and he cries out when he lands on his foot wrong.
Ah! He grabs his ankle. You broke my foot!
Better than being dead. I step on his leg as I walk toward the door, which has him whimpering. I grin. Yeah, I can be a sadistic son of a bitch. I peek out the narrow rectangular window in the door and see papers scattered along the floor. I grip the handle and turn it, but it's locked.
What?
I hiss and try again. I jiggle the handle and tug, but it won't budge.
Why won't the door open?
All doors are locked for safety. Only doctors can get in and out. I get my knife out, and the doctor pushes himself across the floor as far away as he can get from me. Tina, I'm busting out of this room. I have a feeling the hostage is Daphne. You'll be vulnerable since the doctor is useless.
I'll be fine.
I'm not useless. The doctor tries to justify. I dig my phone out of my pocket and see 15 messages from Reaper. I press play and hold the speaker to my ear.
Tongue, we can't get in the hospital and no one can get out. It's all over the news. We are in the parking lot, brother. We're here, but they won't allow us in.
Be careful, the last message says. I press the record button and lower my voice. He is on our floor. I'm busting out of the room and going to find him on my own. I think he has Daphne. I told you I should have killed him the other night and none of this would be happening. I press send, then give my phone to Tina by tossing it to her. Use that if you need to. The guys know I'm here.
Be careful.
If it's her, save her.
Always. I focus on the task at hand, push the panic and terror aside, bad thoughts, and breathe. I take the handle of my knife, smash it against the glass. Thud, thud, thud. It takes a few times before it cracks. It won't budge. Shit, I'm an idiot. I say to myself, then rush to Dr. Pansy Ass and grab his keycard. Thanks for doing your part.
No problem,
he says with chattering teeth. He's in shock. I slide the keycard over the black square and the door clicks when the light turns green. When I step into the main area of the intensive care unit, I'm shocked by how abandoned it is. Paper is everywhere. IV bags are busted on the floor, and that scent of fear is there again, making it hard to breathe. I take a right down the hallway, listening. Oh, fuck, I whisper when I see a man lying face down in a puddle of his own blood, gunshot to the abdomen. It was not a quick death. Looks like he traveled pretty far, according to the blood path. It leads all the way down another hall. It's so quiet. Too quiet. The kind where something could happen at any moment. Silence is loud if one listens carefully enough, and right now it's telling me to be prepared for death. I loop around by going down a back hallway. The lights flicker from being shot. There are a few more dead bodies. A nurse with a gunshot wound to the head and her elderly patient. Another gunshot wound to the head. He knows what he likes, doesn't he? Blood is everywhere. And for the first time in my life, I dread seeing it. I do another loop and find the rest of the halls empty and find myself back at Tina's room. I hear a click and the warm barrel of a gun pointed against the back of my head. Execution style. His favorite. Thank you for listening to Tongue's Target, book 11 in the Ruthless Kings MC series, written by K.L. Savage, performed by Maxine Mitchell and Joe Arden, both members of SAG-AFTRA. Produced by Blue Nose Audio. Production coordination by Candace Lawrence. Post-production by Ron Lipkin. Copyright 2021 by Ruthless Underworld Press. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.